Good morning. The search is on for hundreds of missing people after devastating floods in Nepal and China. The landmark settlement that could affect millions of social media users.
Meta is agreeing to pay up to about $18 billion and then make changes to Instagram and Facebook for teen users.
And where President Trump's new Canadian tariffs could make an impact in the midterms. It's Thursday, August 27th. I'm Yasmeen Khan, in for Shamit the Basu. This is Apple News Today. Massive flash floods on the border between Nepal and Tibet have killed more than 150 people and left hundreds of workers and tourists in the area missing across a 40-mile path of destruction. Much of the world's first glimpse of the devastation came in the form of a surveillance video at a major border crossing in the region. It showed a giant wall of mud and debris crashing down and enveloping a building as people tried to flee. One man described the devastation he saw to news reporters.
I saw around 9 trucks being swept away by the floods, including people. It's heartbreaking. I've been teaching here for 18 years, and I've never seen anything like this before.
Another local man said he learned of the terrible news from a phone call.
I got a call from my brother-in-law this morning, and they were crying and said their entire house had been swept away. 3 family members were rescued, but his brother is still missing.
Experts, in their initial assessments, believe that a collapsing glacier caused the landslide. An avalanche swept down into the river and created high-speed flash floods that subsumed roads and villages. Floods are not uncommon in the region, but the event came as a surprise because it wasn't raining at the time. The Himalaya region is especially vulnerable to the impacts of heavy rain and landslides because of the warming climate. BBC correspondent Navin Singh Kadka, who covers the environment, explained the impact of climate change in the region to the network.
Scientists have been warning us that because of climate crisis, these mountains are losing ice fields, glaciers. And because of that, what happens is all these melting, they come down as water floods and so on and so forth. The rivers and rivulets are the medium to bring down all those boulders, all those sediment. And what happened in this particular case is something they're trying to find out.
Rescue efforts are going to be quite complex. The International Federation of the Red Cross is sending more than $1 million to assist, and local officials have asked China and India to help with the search. David Fisher is head of delegation for the International Red Cross in Nepal. He spoke to the UK's Channel 4 News about the devastation and the challenges ahead.
It had massive impacts in Rossawa district and also in neighboring Novokot district, with about 10,000 households currently estimated to have lost their homes. It has knocked out roads. It has knocked out bridges. There are some areas that are still not accessible to us, about which we're very, very worried.
Rescue efforts are hampered by the rough and mountainous terrain. The area features narrow gorges, deep valleys, and other geographically challenging landscapes that make it difficult to access, even by helicopter. Officials say this could be the worst disaster in the country since a 7.6 magnitude earthquake hit Nepal in 2015, killing nearly 9,000 people. This is a developing story, and you can follow along for more updates in the Apple News app. Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, agreed Wednesday to pay up to $18 billion to settle a case involving almost every U.S. state. The states allege that Meta deliberately designed its platforms to keep kids and teenagers hooked, undermining their mental health. In the settlement, Meta also agreed to make major changes to its products for young users, such as when they can use the apps, how long they can stay on them, and what kinds of content and notifications they see. Diana Novak-Jones with Reuters told us about the protections Meta plans to implement.
That will include setting a daily 2-hour limit across Facebook and Instagram. They'll be verifying ages, and they'll be disabling push notifications during school hours, quieting notifications at night, and making other changes.
Teenagers will also no longer be able to see the like count on posts. That will be hidden by default. And it will block them from using certain filters to change their appearance.
Most of these changes will roll out over the next few months, typically within the next 6 months, but they do have up to a year to improve age verification processes.
The settlement was announced quickly, just over a week after the trial started. A former safety engineer for Meta testified, telling the jury the company knew that its products were harmful to young users.
Arturo Bahar accused the company of knowingly pursuing features designed to keep kids online as long as possible, even though they knew that that might harm children's well-being.
The CEO of Instagram also testified this week, defending Meta's approach to safety just before the trial suddenly ended. The settlement effectively ends a separate federal trial where four states, California, Colorado, Kentucky, and New Jersey, were seeking roughly $200 billion from Meta over similar allegations. Meta also settled a lawsuit with Texas yesterday for about $1 billion. But the company still faces many other legal challenges involving similar allegations.
The settlement does not touch thousands of lawsuits that are still pending in state and federal court involving claims from individuals, parents, school districts, and even municipalities over the impact that Meta and other social media companies have had on children.
The settlement could be a turning point, not just for the company, but for the entire social media industry, because the amount Meta will pay ultimately depends on what happens with its competitors. Meta is guaranteed to pay over $12 billion over the next decade, and potentially up to $18 billion if companies like TikTok, YouTube, and Snap also settle with the states and adopt similar restrictions. The U.S. and Canada are in the midst of another round of their trade war. After President Trump imposed new tariffs last weekend, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney announced retaliatory ones on a variety of U.S. exports. Starting September 8th, Canada will double import taxes on U.S. aluminum and steel. Other goods, like milk, lumber, and electronics, could face anywhere from a 15 to 50% hike. By giving Trump a week or so to respond before the tariffs take effect, Carney is hoping to turn down the temperature so talks can resume. But for now, no one is talking, and the clock is ticking.
We are on the precipice of potential economic disaster with Canada.
Burgess Everett is the Congressional Bureau Chief for Semaphore.
We've seen this before with the president. He loves tariffs. He threatens huge tariffs. He backs off the tariffs a lot of the time, or he does smaller tariffs, or he negotiates a deal and then does smaller tariffs. So there's a little bit of a playbook here.
Except this time, it's playing out with just a couple of months until the midterm elections. And there are several Senate seats at play in states where voters could feel the brunt of economic impacts firsthand, like Ohio and Alaska, where Republicans are defending seats.
We heard lots of complaints about tariffs throughout the last year and a half, but the timing was never such that Republicans could be punished for those tariffs.
Like Senator Susan Collins of Maine, who's defending her seat in what polls suggest is a close matchup against Democrat Troy Jackson. Collins spoke out about the tariffs on the campaign trail in recent days.
I really want us to go back to the very friendly, economically beneficial relationship that we have with our Canadian neighbors.
The tariffs could impact all sorts of goods in Maine's trade with its neighbor to the north, like lumber, blueberries, potatoes, and Maine's signature crustacean, the lobster. Collins noted yesterday that she's voted a number of times to terminate tariffs with Canada.
She's clearly not happy about this. She's been saying it's a mistake to do more Canada tariffs and saying that it could be raising prices on Mainers because these borders are very porous in the sense that the products in Maine go to Canada, get processed, and come back to Maine. And so tariffs could make all of those things more expensive.
Michigan is another battleground state caught in the middle here.
They have a huge manufacturing sector, and that is one of the busiest trade crossings in North America. And so it's not hard to see how that could affect Michigan's economy. The Republican there, Mike Rogers, has basically been saying that Trump wants to get us better deals on manufacturing, et cetera. He hasn't really deviated from the president. He's kind of sticking with him. And so there's room for a Democrat to go after him there.
Democratic nominee Abdul El-Sayed has said that Rogers is a, quote, rubber stamp for policies like this from Trump. The president has not shied away from his tariff push with Canada. And Vice President J.D. Vance actually campaigned in Maine recently, where he defended their efforts to get a, quote, fair deal. But Everett said if the tariff back and forth continues and hits people's wallets, it could have ramifications for Republicans.
Not only is this one of our closest allies, but if constituents dislike the tariffs and get mad at the president, the only way they have to exercise their emotions is to vote against Republicans or not vote for Republicans in the midterms. And so I think the timing of this is super tricky and is what makes this such a big deal, because you have the midterms colliding with an economic fight with our closest ally right to the north of us.
Here are a few other stories we're following. CIA Director John Ratcliffe made a rare and unannounced visit to Moscow this week. Now, the Wall Street Journal is reporting on that visit's purpose. Ratcliffe was delivering a warning to Russia not to attack NATO countries. The trip comes amid other reporting that U.S. officials have become concerned that Russian President Vladimir Putin may engage in some kind of limited assault on an allied country in the next few years. A Kremlin spokesperson said that Ratcliffe met with Russian intelligence officials, but not Putin, and a spokesperson for the CIA declined to comment to the Journal. Actor Tim Curry, known for eccentric roles and a devilish grin, died yesterday. He had suffered a major stroke in 2012. The three-time Tony nominee broke through on stage in the 70s with a starring role in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He'd reprise his performance as Dr. Frankenfurter in the film adaptation that became a cult classic and a staple of midnight movie screenings. Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. He also terrified audiences as Pennywise the Clown in Stephen King's It, and played a memorable role in Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Curry was asked on CBS Sunday Morning last year about his views on dying.
I try to avoid it, as I think we all do. But I suspect that in the end, I will welcome it.
Curry was 80 years old. And finally, tonight, you're going to want to turn your eyes to the sky. That's because billions of people, more than 44% of the world's population, in fact, will have a chance to see a blood moon lunar eclipse. Don't be alarmed by the name. It's when almost all of the moon's surface falls into Earth's shadow and creates a deep orange-red hue. The partial phase of the eclipse will last more than 3 hours, and the whole process will take more than five. You can expect it to begin in the United States around 9:23 Eastern tonight. It's just the latest chapter in a dramatic eclipse season that saw a solar eclipse in Europe just a couple of weeks ago. Tonight, we're the lucky ones. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. New York Magazine looks at the revamped 60 Minutes ahead of its upcoming season and how CBS News Editor-in-Chief Barry Weiss has changed the show. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.